You're listening to Cairo News Radio Middays.
Welcome back to Cairo News Radio Middays. Jack Stein and Spike O'Neill, Mr. Sean Hannity himself. You ever miss an episode of Sean Hannity? Spike, you ever miss one?
My record now is I've missed 442 in a row.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't tell you the last time Hannity kind of goes under the radar for some reason. You hear a lot about Carlson. I would say you hear more about, what's her name? Judge Jeanine.
Judge Jeanine, yeah.
Right. You don't really hear anything, or you hear more about Greg Gutfeld than you hear about Hannity, right? What does Hannity do? He's got his radio show. I know that he does. It's very, very successful. But in terms of Hannity making the news, you don't really see a lot of Hannity hot takes making the rounds anymore, right?
He's the stable one.
Okay.
I mean, it's literally, I'm trying to be as flattering as the guy's an incredible professional with an astounding, successful career.
Yeah.
But he's not the one that's going to get sound bites. He's old, reliable.
Yeah. And he's also a little bit more old school, I would say, as well. He's kind of the Fox old guard. You know what I mean? He's kind of from that era, at least.
Last one of that era, pretty much.
Yeah. So Trump met with Hannity. What was it? It wasn't last night. It was the night before last.
Was it over the weekend, I think, or Monday night?
Okay. Yeah. I totally missed it. I had no idea that they were doing an interview. Now, back in the day, I would have thought that this would have been must see TV for one Jack Stein, but not so much anymore. So I caught the interview afterwards, and I'm watching it, and I go, okay, this is going to be a nice kind of a booster for one Donald Trump, right? He's going to meet with Hannity, who's his friend, and they're going to talk about issues that are important to Trump, and it's going to help him with his campaign. I thought it was going to be fairly benign. But then I'm watching it, Spike, and I'm not saying this to be unkind to former President Donald Trump. He seemed off. He seemed tired. He seemed like he was whining. He didn't seem very presidential, and he seemed kind of almost immature in a lot of ways, like when he was talking about Ron DeSantis. Now, say what you want about Ron DeSantis. He's very, very popular amongst the members of the GOP, and I found his claims about one Ron DeSantis, before we get into his scheme about Ukraine, I found his comments about Ron DeSantis to be fairly insulting. Now, I have my own criticisms about one Ron DeSantis,
right,
but we're talking about a guy who served his country. We're talking about a guy who is, you know, in the highest of the high military elite force. And the story that Trump says about DeSantis is so fictionalized. It just drips of insecurity and narcissism. So here's Hannity asked Trump about his relationship with Ron DeSantis, and Trump said that they were never friends. Here's what that sounds like.
Ron came to see me, tears in his eyes. He said, I need you to do me a big favor. First he asked for the meeting, then he asked me for the favor. I said, what's the favor? Would you endorse me? I fought for you. But again, a lot of people fought for me. You fought for me only rightfully, but you fought for me if you thought I was right.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more than he did. But he said, I need your endorsement. I said, Ron, you're so far behind. I can't imagine that if you got George Washington's endorsement combined with the great, late, great Abraham Lincoln, if you had their endorsements, I don't think you could win, Ron, but tell me about it. Go ahead. He said, I'm telling you, I think I could win if I could get your endorsement. And he was, you'll have to check the records, but many, many, many points. It was over. And the nomination just...
And it was very close.
The nomination was just, okay.
I love that Hannity has to correct him in real time, and he has to correct him in real time and say, that's not true. None of that is true. It was a very close race. None of what you were saying is accurate whatsoever. And what's bizarre about this is, and I'm just trying to analyze this from a political standpoint, why you go after DeSantis if you're the presumptive front runner for the GOP nomination, I have no idea.
Well,
why you tell this story about him crying? It just makes you look like a teenager. It doesn't make you look very presidential.
Well, to be fair to the former president and to his defense, mm-hmm. Hannity brought up the subject of DeSantis, you know, and what Donald Trump did was what Donald Trump always does, takes credit.
It
was dead in the water, it was going nowhere, it was an over, it was, you know, it's who comes to me crying tears in his eyes, like, you know, it's a sad thing that you are portraying such a detached from reality account of what happened.
Yeah.
Because I'm with you. I don't know what Ron DeSantis is like. I don't know what the meeting with Trump was like. That may be exactly what happened. But I got to tell you, when one guy is kind of detached from reality and the other guy has, as you mentioned, served our military in the highest capacity, a guy could kill you with a dinner fork.
Right.
You
know,
and then still, and still remember to choose food 31 times a bite. I don't know how much validity the story has, and it's a sad statement. And again, I don't want to pile up on the former president either. You know how I feel about the guy.
Oh yeah,
He doesn't need me beating on him to have the troubles he's going to have.
Right.
I can sit this one out.
We're just talking about this from a kind of a politically analytic standpoint. You know, and that's not to kind of punch down at the guy. It's more so just to say if Joe Biden had gone to, I don't know, who's friendly to Joe Biden? If he had gone to Anderson Cooper and he said, well, you know, I was Gavin Newsom was running and he came to me with tears in his eyes. And I said, Gav, you know,
come on, man. Like, come on, Gav. You know,
I would say
biggest economy in America, man. Come on. I'm a little guy from Delaware. I took a train. I still take trains. Well, sometimes let me show the coal up in the front of the trains.
My dad sat me down and he said, Joey, 50 years ago, he said, Joey, your friend T-Bone, and you are going to do some great things eventually. So the weird thing about this, though, the one that really got me and the one that kind of made me angry is that Trump, and don't play the clip yet, but Trump told Hannity that he has the solution to the war in Ukraine. And one of the things that I think it's important to kind of educate people on is that former presidents, there's a custom in the United States where former presidents, if they have diplomatic knowledge or economic knowledge on a particular issue, they can request to speak to the current president of the United States. And out of courtesy, generally that president takes the phone call and they talk about the issue. So Reagan did it with Carter over nuclear stuff in Iran. Obama did it with George W. Bush over the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. George W. Bush did it with Bill Clinton over the Kashmir region in Pakistan. So this is not unprecedented for former presidents to reach out and say, hey, I've got something I could contribute to this. Let me help you out with my inside knowledge. Trump says that he has the solution to the war in Ukraine. Now, keep that in mind, that former presidents, through custom, often reach out to current presidents to give them advice. So Trump told Hannity that he has the solution to the war in Ukraine. Here's what that sounded like.
Oh, come on.
It's possible we'll be in World War III with these idiots that are doing what they're doing. You could end up in a nuclear world war, which will make World War I and World War II look like patty cakes, okay? This unbelievable, because we have people that don't know what they're doing. But if it's not solved, I will have it solved in 24 hours with Zelensky and with Putin. And there's a very easy negotiation to take place, but I don't want to tell you what it is because then I can't use that negotiation. It'll never work. But there's a very easy negotiation to take place. I will have it solved within one day, a peace between them. Now, that's a year and a half. That's a long time.
So what he's basically saying, and Spike, correct me if I'm wrong, is that he's much more concerned with him getting the credit for solving the conflict. If he has the solution and he's the guy to make it happen, what he's saying is that he cares more about him getting the credit than human beings' lives, which is a bizarre, like he's so emotionally fragile that he doesn't want anybody else. He's got to be the guy to do it. Otherwise, it's not going to work. And I'm not going to tell anybody what the plan is.
Well, either that or he's holding the solution hostage. Elect me president and I'll save millions of lives. Otherwise, I don't care.
Now, that to me is disturbing for a number of reasons. That to me is bizarre for a number. And if you're a Trump supporter out there, I would imagine you might be saying to yourself, well, hey, he's got the knowledge. He knows how to do it. Why doesn't he pick up the phone, call Joe Biden and say, hey, Joe, listen, I know I said some unkind things about you and about your lovely. Well, actually, you know what we should do? We should do this, Mike. Just, hey, it's me. It's Donald Trump, Joe Biden. I know that I've said some unkind things about you and your lovely wife. And I know that maybe Sleepy Joe was a little bit of a jab. And I just want to let you know that I sent you a couple pints of ice cream. And I think that I could solve this whole, you know, Ukraine-Russia thing. Is there any way you could maybe get me on a phone call with Zelensky and Putin. Maybe the four of us could have a four-way chat like it's 2006. Remember those group phone calls with all the girls? So we could just...
Remember Saturday Live used to party line in Monica and Clinton, right? Saturday Live with Daryl Hammond.
So we could all just, you know, party line in. We could all chat about it, and I could probably fix this over lunch. And I'm sorry about, you know, all the mean things that I've said about you. And would you let me do this for you? That's what he could do, right? And potentially saving tens of millions of lives. But instead, what he chooses to do is say, well, I want to be the one to do it. No one else can do it. That's not cool, man. I don't care if you're a Trump supporter. I don't care if you hate the guy. If he has the knowledge, you would imagine that that would be the adult thing to do, or even, I dare I say, the presidential thing to do in that circumstance.
Yeah, even the humane thing to do if you really want to, you know, lower the bar.
Right.
I mean, but then we have to assume a couple things there, though. First off, he actually does have a solution.
How dare you? Of course he does. He's the president.
Okay.
How dare you?
And is his solution, I can only speculate, we're just kind of spitballing here. Is his solution to give Putin everything he wants?
Yes, I would guarantee you that he would say, if I had to guess, if I know Trump, because he's a deal maker, I would say that he would go to Zelensky and he would offer him, you know,
look, you're not using the Donbass. Nobody goes there. It's terrible real estate. It's not close to the water. You don't know. Cut your losses. You know, it's what the market value. I'll tell you, I could build some tall towers. You know, Trump Donbass, whatever. You
I mean. So he would give him the region. And then he would offer NATO membership to Ukraine and then a weapons deal to Ukraine and then probably a weapons or an oil deal to Russia. It would be my assumption based on my knowledge of geopolitical climates going on.
Well, Jack, I got to tell you, I trust your knowledge of geopolitical, ecopolitical, you know, more than I do the former president.
Sure. But that's the deal that I would guarantee you that he would probably make. It's, he would probably get, you know, Putin back on the international markets. And I'm sure he could do it. I don't want to take it away from that. I'm sure he could do it if he wanted to. The bizarre thing is the weird barrier there of, well, I'm going to be the kid in the sandbox who gets to do it.
Yeah,
and no one else
you have to wait
play.
18 minutes. I hope they hold on.
Right, exactly. So those are my thoughts about that. Spike, any final thoughts before we move on to Washington?
No. Although, did you see is it Armenia? Has told President Putin that if he comes to Armenia, he will be arrested for international war crimes.
Wow.
Yeah. The Armenian, director of foreign affairs said, look, I have to tell you, as we enter into this Rome agreement about with the International Crimes Commission, this Rome agreement of international states that will honor the international court's decision to pursue war crime charges against Putin, and the Russians, of course, against Armenia joining into this Rome Pact, but Rome is Armenia is insistent upon joining this group of nations to help, you know, hold up and stand for international law. And they said to Putin, "Don't come here. If you come here, we will be obligated to arrest you for international war crimes."
Here's the thing: I don't understand. The man is worth many billions of dollars, Vladimir Putin. He has castles. I don't know if people know this, but the oligarchs in Russia, they have castles. They have monuments built to them. He's got everything that anybody could ever want. His children are all billionaires, right?
Yeah.
Anything the man wants, he gets. In many ways, he's kind of like Saddam Hussein in Iraq in the mid-90s. I mean, you know, the guy could get anything he wants, even though there was a trade embargo in Iraq. I mean, Hussein was still getting DVDs from the United States. I mean, so the guy can get whatever he wants. I don't know why he has to go anywhere. I don't know. I'm sure he'll be fine saying, I mean, and who wants to go to Armenia anyway, right? I mean,
it's not this time of year. The mosquitoes are outrageous. You know, no, I just, that's the first country I've said, that I've seen actually say, look, you know, you are rocking and rolling over there. You're invading a nation. You've got your Europetro deals going. But if you come to Armenia, we will be sovereign and we will join whatever group we want to join. And if that group says, you know, if that group says to arrest you, if you come here, we will arrest you.
I think that's some puffery. I think that that's
quite possible.
We're going to arrest you, Vladimir Putin, if you come. I mean, like, at one, as if he would actually go, but two, as if that would not immediately trigger a conflict between, you know what I mean? This kind of geopolitical jockeying that people do, I just am so we don't live in a world anymore where, you know, the Kaiser can't go to France because his cousin will arrest him if he shows up in a horse and buggy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that world doesn't exist anymore. And yet we still talk about it as if it does. And that's what's so bizarre about it to me, right? I mean, look at the way that people talk about a country like North Korea. You know what I mean? The Korean people, the North Korean people are effectively held hostage. They are effectively held hostage by what do they call it? It's called a necocracy. Have you heard of this? It's because the dear leader has been dead for, you know, however many years, but he's still technically ruling over the country.
Uh-huh.
So they have they live in a necocracy.
Exactly. Wow.
So we have this literal prison country out there, and every president since Bill Clinton has been saying something's got to be done about that. Something's got to be done about that. Every single president says, remember George W. Bush was saying they're part of the axis of evil out there. Ooh, spooky. Yeah. And what do we do about it? We just let them hang out. Just you guys are just hanging out over there, not going to do a thing about it. Geopolitics, the more you get into it, the more kind of just bleak it seems, because a lot of it is based on where business interests are and where NGOs can get the most amount of money, right? So when we talk about geopolitics, I think that people need to think about it less like risk, right? Less like
Irkutsk, pick them up, 5-on-7, boom, move your army.
Yeah,
right.
And
you need to think about it much more like Monopoly. I guarantee you, if they found diamonds or if they found oil in North Korea, that place would be, all of a sudden we got to get in there. We got to liberate those
people. Human rights issues to talk about. Yeah,
we got some human rights issues that we got to go deal with those North Koreans.
Kids, those 6-year-olds got to be free to dig diamonds.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. My point. So and then you get NGOs going in there and they can try to fix it. And then the American taxpayer just keeps shelling out money. So when we talk about geopolitics, again, I think we got to think about it much more like Monopoly rather than, I don't know, whatever.
No, risk was the right reference. Totally was. Yeah. Can't just roll the dice. You got to actually plan.
All right. So we'll take a really quick break. And we didn't get to this story about how Washington is moving to end child sex abuse lawsuit time limits. We'll get to that in the 2 o'clock hour. Okay. I believe we'll just bump all that over. And when we get back, we're going to be doing a little bit of cringe or based. Spike, I believe that you and I will be debating, or rather talking about, how to avoid vacation time with bad family. What is this article? How to avoid bad family incidents on family vacations.
What not to bring up with your family members when you are on vacation. Want to ruin a Airbnb on the coast of Hawaii? We'll tell you how. Right after
we'll be right back. Is obsessed with the fact that he's going on vacation, so he continues to subconsciously put in news stories about vacations in our show sheet. Isn't that right, Chris?
Can't stop. I think that is actually kind of true.
You're going to Malaysia, correct? And you're gonna do what for when you're in Malaysia?
Malaysia about. Is that what you do?
Yeah.
Malaysia. That's where the term comes from.
I'm gonna sit on an island and do nothing for quite a while.
Oh, that's
perfect. Yeah. Amazing. So there is a list here from the New York Times, Spike, that would you mind going through this list for us? And we will determine if these are good or bad, meaning cringe or based, pieces of advice on how to avoid bad family incidents on family vacations. I can tell you that I choose intentionally now to not vacay with anybody that I'm related to, because I can't stand it. Oh, they are the most boring people I have ever met in my. I am an interesting and dynamic human being, Spike. I have complex thoughts about things. If you ask me my feelings on a 1968 VW bug or a bag of tangerines, I will give you dissertations on my thoughts about these things. My family, thank you so much. My family are funny people, but they are they just want to sit around and watch Bones all day. You know what I mean? Can we please go outside? And like, USA's running a series. It's 12 hours all day. It's just Bones. Bones. We got to sit around and watch Bones. I don't want anything to do with these people. So what's on the list? Like, what are we talking about here? And how to avoid bad family incidents.
Okay, so
on family
vacation. The story from the New York Times is talking about is a return to pre-pandemic numbers for something that has been missing from the last few years, and that's multi-generational family travel.
I thought we were talking about how to avoid bad family incidents on family vacations.
If you want to have bad family travel, take grandparents and grandkids along with you, and it will be a freaking nightmare. Okay? This article, right. I mean, there's people are returning to pre-pandemic numbers. Because a lot of people really like to have the multi-generational experience of seeing the homeland together. Ugh. You know, where the village where your grandma was born with the grandkids in tow. No. And I know that sounds horrible to you. We just did this as a family. I mean, it was pre-pandemic, but we did this. My sister-in-law is married with two kids. I am married with two kids. We've got grandparents that, came along on the trip with us, right? So we had this multi-generational experience with everything from age, it was probably 11 to 70, 85 years old. And what we did, and they say to do this, and it's very good advice, is to make sure that everyone has, first and foremost, their own space.
Yeah.
Don't underestimate, you know, how much space you'll need for everyone to not be on top of each other and to have time to do their own thing. Another key component of this is not to overschedule everybody. I mean, we can all be together and create wonderful memories. And we did. We created amazing memories. But that's because sometimes we let the old folks watch Bones. And yeah. We took the kids down to get surfing lessons. And we didn't drag the wheelchair and the oxygen tank to the beach to make them watch the kids fall off surfboards for 2 hours. They wanted to do what they wanted to do. It's their vacation, too.
Yeah, Sarah and I went to Maui with her mom and her little brother. And her little brother's like 10 years old, right? So, and we're going for a wedding, and then we're there for about a week afterwards. And Sarah's mom is, she is a, we're going to do this on this day and this on this day and this on, you know, that kind of thing. And what she didn't realize is that when you got a 10-year-old kid, what he wants to do is he wants to go down to the beach and he wants to mess around in the water. And then he wants to go and he wants to go to the aquarium and he wants to go look at the petroglyph. That's how you keep a 10-year-old kid interested.
And sometimes he wants to get on his Nintendo Switch.
Right, exactly.
And let him do it. Give him that time.
So she goes, we're going to go see the botanical gardens. We're going to go to the botanical gardens. And I go, Grace, you know, Chase and I could just take him down to the beach real quick and we could just hang out. And she goes, no, he needs to see the horticulture of this fine island. And I go, you know, Grace, I feel like, you know, Chase and I could just go hang out. We could take some boogie boards and we could just go hang out. And then you and Sarah could come back. And she goes, we're going to the botanical gardens. I have never seen a more upset 10-year-old in my life than this kid walking around rows and rows of flowers that he doesn't care about. He's doing, you know, the thing that 10-year-old boys do where they like flop around when they're not interested.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like walking up and down the aisles. And then she starts getting mad at him and she's like, Chase, be more respectful. Be more respectful. And he's like, I don't want to be here. And the whole time I was just thinking, lady, you should have taken a page out of Jack Stein's book, which is that you got to break it apart every so often.
Right.
You want to be here. You want to see the flowers. Chase wants to go boogie board. Like, let's just kind of live in that world together.
You got to respect every member of the group, their special needs, their interest levels, their attention spans. I mean, that's the key thing. And we did this. We booked Jack this 5-bedroom house in Kona on the Big Island of Hawaii, right?
Yeah.
With the largest in-ground pool I have ever seen in my life.
Wow.
And we spread the cost across 4 families. So it was incredibly reasonably priced. I mean, we had sunsets every day. We were a half a block from the beach. We had so much space. We were literally, you know, calling each other on the phone to find out what you wanted for dinner. You know, because they were in the other wing of this place.
Yeah.
And we planned ahead. We accounted for everybody's special needs, everybody's special interests. We respected everybody's stage of life. You know, grandma's not going to get up and run and go and go and go and go and go. She's going to need some downtime. That's cool. The kids are going to need some time to be kids, to goof off by themselves, to noodle out in the pool or to sit on their, they're on their Game Boys. I mean, yes, but they're in the sun. Look at them. They're on a blanket next to the beach playing. Okay, but look how much fun they're having. Look where they are. They're getting vitamin C. Shut up, grandma. You don't have to go make them see flowers. but what we, the one thing that I did, and I highly recommend this too, my daughter wanted to bring her significant other. And it was a serious relationship, right?
Ooh, yeah.
And so I had to weigh this. Okay, no, is this just a family thing? Or do I respect my adult daughter and the person she's decided whether they want to spend the rest of their life with? And do I bring them along and include them in all this? So we made the decision.
And you said no.
I said no,
he's not coming.
I said, yeah, no, you're going to be miserable. You're going to complain. You're going to make everybody, and you're going to ruin everybody's time because I'm sticking to it. It's on my family. No, yeah. I brought him along. But you know what I did that was smart?
Made him pay.
I got him their own place down the street from us.
Ah.
Because while I know my daughter might not be a virgin, I don't want soundproof. I don't want to hear about this stuff happening during my vacation. And they joined the family when they wanted to be a part of what we were doing, which was quite often. I mean, it's just respecting what everybody wants to do, what's important to them, where they are in their life journey, and making sure you don't like you said, everybody is going to the lava tunnels.
Right.
No, we're not. Like, she can't get that wheelchair into the lava tunnels. What happens if there's an eruption? We'll lose Grandma. She can't run.
Chris, are you guys planning on having when you go to Malaysia, are you guys planning on having a kind of a separate thing, or are you guys all going to be in one bungalow?
It's just my girlfriend and I. I don't hang out with my family much.
Yeah, this is good.
You guys are so much smarter than me.
In this list, though, I thought it was interesting. At first, I was like, if you're all coming from the same destination, you don't have to book or fly together. And at first, I was like, that seemed weird. But then I thought about it. It's like, that's where the stress comes.
Oh, yes.
People get snippy and snappy. It's like, yeah, just all show up. Meet there sometime wherever you're going.
And heck, if somebody catches a couple hours later flight, we'll come back to the airport and grab you. We got a rental car.
Yeah, that's what we did when we went to Maui. We did not take the same plane. We left at different times. You know, it was just really got different rental cars. It was really the way to be. And I realize that, you know, some people are like trying to save money on it and to figure out how it is. But if you have the luxury to be able to do that, I highly recommend it. Speaking of a luxury, by the way, there's a report out saying that, or there's a guy, at least, who's claiming that human beings will be immortal very, very soon. I'm very, very skeptical. Find out when we get back right after this. Hey! All right. So there's a guy. His name is Ray Kurzweil. And he was a former Google engineer, and I guess he also played keys for Stevie Wonder. Is that what I hear tell? Is this the rumor that's circulating?
He invented a kind of synthesizer. He's done he's done tons of different things, and he and Stevie Wonder started a company.
Big thinker.
He's also got, according to his himself, 86% of his last 147 predictions have been correct. So those are, you know, not bad. Not bad for, you know, it's a claim that I make that I'm right about 100% of the time. So obviously it's true. So he says that humans will achieve immortality in 8 years, and I am not sure how accurate this is. He says it's going to be through nanobots, little robots that we inject into our body, and they swim around, and they fix dead cells, and they prevent cancer, so on and so forth, and then we can live forever because we have little nanobots inside of us. This, to me, Spike, seems, if it is true, who wants to live forever? I mean, truthfully now, I'm just saying, I certainly do not, right? Because I'm really interesting, I'm really funny, but like in 200 years, I don't want people to be like, man, is that guy really still around? Do you know what I mean? Like, I am a fascinating individual. I want to have a body of work. You know, like how Kubrick only has a certain number of films. Tarantino is going to come out with his last movie, supposedly. There's a body of work that you produce, and then you just kind of leave it alone before your legacy is ruined, right? So I think that that is the best way that we should approach life and we should think about life. I don't know if I want to be immortal in reading about Kanye West 1,000 years from now. I don't really know if I want to be debating issues about Joe Biden 20,000 years. Do you see what I'm saying here, Spike?
Oh, yeah.
We think people die for a reason. I mean, if Frank Sinatra was still alive, I'm positive I would find a reason to not like him.
His new stuff sucks. Yeah. I mean, his Miley Cyrus Sinatra duets are horrific.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you get tired of living? At a point, wouldn't you have seen it all? Been here, done that. Year 800 was just, that was when I got on the backside of the mountain, year 800. I couldn't amaze or entertain or amuse myself anymore.
I read I wrote a spec script at a certain point when I was in college about this idea, and it was basically this guy who's got a terminal disease, and there is his family's, they've already taken the magical thing to make them live forever, and then he's one of the last holdouts, and he says, "Well, I don't want to do it. I want to be the one who I want to die. I don't want to live anymore." And so the spec script, which is basically like a, it's like 50% of what a script actually is. It's a lot of, you know, it's just a lot of the kind of the meat and the bones of the story. Basically, it's him moving through why he doesn't want to take the immortality juice so that he can live forever. I got an A on the project, but that's besides the point. The philosophic implications to this are what, right? That we have to listen to how Madonna feels about this or that until the end of time, which I don't want to do, right? We have to
Feeding her, too. Anybody thought of that? I mean, not to pick on Madonna, but hell, you know, the only, right. the only chance this planet has got is if we keep dying.
Right. And so there is something to be said about allowing yourself to transpire and move on. So although this might seem cool to the more, I don't know, the narcissistic pieces of ourselves that say, I'm going to live forever and I'm always going to be important, I just don't see it. And also, Spike, here's the other thing. At a certain point in time, the human brain runs out of space. It runs out of the ability, you know what I'm talking about? So yeah. I forget the exact number or the amount of data that your brain can actually hold.
It happened to me in the second semester of the 10th grade.
There you go. See, exactly. Done. At a certain point in time, we all just kind of run out of space. Some of us sooner rather than later. Andrew, would you want to live forever? Is this something that you would want to do?
No.
Yeah.
That maybe a little bit longer, but not forever. I wouldn't want to have to choose to end my life. That's the big thing.
Yeah, man. And I mean, you know, I love Overwatch 2. I love playing Overwatch 2. But if I'm still playing Overwatch in 1,000 years, I would get pretty depressed. That's like, you have to move on and allow yourself to experience the process of death. So I think this just feeds our ego. It just feeds our own narcissism, this idea that I'm important and I'll always be relevant and I'll always have things to say and everyone will always like me, when this is simply just not the case, and I think we should stop.
Well, if I had to choose between you and Kanye, I'd pick you.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Consolation. I appreciate that. Chris Martin, do you want to live forever? Is that what you want?
I was promised that. I was raised a Jehovah's Witness, and that's what they talk about all the time. And now I don't talk to my parents because I was like, I don't want it. I mean, it's in the back of my mind because of that. But I think there will be new things, though. You had said, you know, playing that certain game, there'll be new games to play in the next 1,000 years.
Well, okay, so this one time I got a taxi. For whatever reason, Uber, the app, wasn't working, and so I got a taxi back to my house. This is when I lived in California, and this is gonna be years, about 10 years ago. And the taxi driver was a really nice guy, really chatty guy. He's asking me what I do, and we're talking about it, and he's super impressed with me. And he says, "You know what, man, I want to give you something. We've had such an enjoyable conversation. I want to give you something." And he gives me a pamphlet for the Jehovah's Witnesses, and he doesn't charge me for the ride. And I go, "Wow, thank you so much. I appreciate this. I'll see you around." And then he started showing up to my house, started coming by every so many days. He'd come by and say, "Hey, you read that pamphlet?" And I would go, "Nope, just get into it." And it got to the point where I just stopped opening the door because I didn't want to be mad at the guy. I just didn't want anything to do. You know what I mean? I just felt so, because he was such a sweet, nice guy. But I was like, "Guy, I don't really want to be in your church. All due respect, my friend, but I don't really want to be a part of it." But he was really aggressive. I don't think he went away for a couple of months.
That's strange. I have to say, even for them, that's kind of
really
strange. That's okay. Determined. Yeah.
Well, maybe he just really liked me because I'm such a cool guy.
We don't come across the Jack Stein every day of your life. You are a find.
Yeah, thank you. And so that's why, when I want to pass away, I want to transpire so that people can look back at my body of work over my life and they can say, "That's amazing. Look at that time capsule," like a David Bowie. You know what I mean? Like that kind of a thing.
I imagine Michelangelo would be good. I'd get tired of his act after a couple hundred centuries, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Great. Another winky. Super cool. You make anything else? You know, geez, just how about put some grapes in? Look, it's a bowl of fruit. Oh, don't hang it on that guy. Now it's not a bowl of fruit anymore. Great.
We'll take a really quick break when we get back. New updates about the shooting in Nashville, as well as some local stuff coming up. Washington has decided to passing an extension on certain limits when it comes to certain crimes. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this.